This talk was given by Danica Shoan-Ankeli at the Zen Center of New York City. Shoan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ccnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Shoan. My pronouns are she, her, and I am really happy to be with you all here today and on Father's Day. So happy Father's Day to all the dads and all of the future dads and all of the future dads who don't even know yet that they are a future dad. So here we are, in the midst of our lives, and what a strange thing, life, actually, what a strange thing. I wonder if that's what brought some of us here to begin with. This strange, beautiful, terrifying thing we call life that we are always in the midst of. And practice is a way to take that strange, beautiful, terrifying life and learn how to use it, so that you can really live and really love. That's what I wanted to talk about. So I want to offer to start a couple of passages. One that is a classic Dharmic teaching, and the other, which is also a classic Dharmic teaching, but not in Buddhist form. So, from the Diamond Sutra, "Thus shall you think of this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom, and a dream." From The Tempest. Our revels now are ended. These are actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, ye all which inherit it, shall dissolve. And like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Do you know that feeling? Oh, first, in case you don't know, a rack, I looked this up. So this is Prospero in The Tempest, and really all you need to know is he's a magician, he's a conjurer, and for the benefit of his daughter and his future son-in-law, has conjured an apparition, a gorgeous apparition of spirits who offer a performance of sorts, and then he dismisses them, and they're gone. Okay? And so, you know, that very famous line, which is justly famous, and I don't think has lost anything despite being so often quoted, "We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep." Wow. I used to be an English teacher, so indulge me. But that line, "and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. A rack is a wisp of cloud. So it goes and there's not even a wisp left. I was thinking of that experience that is somewhat common, I think, where you are either waking from a deep sleep or are in a strange place and wake in the middle of the night and you don't know where you are and you don't know maybe who you are exactly or like what you're in the middle of. You know that feeling? And it like takes a minute. You literally can almost feel like there's a cognitive process happening here that's like, choom, 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 choom. Oh, right, okay. I'm Shoan, I'm in a Motel 6, it's the middle of July, da, 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 da. So that feeling, I think, is actually very much a glimpse into the insubstantiality of what seems so substantial. And, you know, that's a very innocuous glimpse. And we can have, you know, glimpses where it's not a glimpse, our life is literally coming apart, or we have an experience or a loss, often it's with loss of a loved one or of a way of life or of a something that we identify with so much, where it goes and we're left with like, whoa, like who am I and what's going on? And as unnerving as those feelings can be, I think there's also, even, I think, if once we're past the initial grief, even in sometimes really difficult situations, there can be a sense of exhilaration because we're touching something more true, actually, than our like little ordinary dream life. So the Buddhist teaching is that this is a dream life. Of course, it's very real to us, and we need to take it seriously. And this is a teaching that could be misunderstood, misinterpreted, and often is. So it doesn't mean anything about not living in our relative world and in our bodies and in our identities. But to be able to actually see those for what they are and understand how they're arising, and then use that—that's what practice is for. So that feeling of like, what is going on? You know, what is this? Can you like get in touch with that feeling at all? Like, whoa, like what is going on? Really? And we find out, we can find out more. You know, there's an essential mystery, but we can come closer and closer and actually use that question and that mystery as part of our clarifying process. And we do that not by, you know, going out to like study what is going on and like observing a group of people and like, okay, what are they up to and what can I deduce about that? We do it like super personally. It's so direct. It's like you have your own seat. Okay, sit down. We're all going to be really quiet and really still. And everybody, you do your own work. You're responsible for your own work. Reggie Ray says, he's a Buddhist teacher, contemporary Buddhist teacher. And he says in a book, a recent book on practice called The Practice of Pure Awareness, he says, I'm not talking about meditation as a lifestyle choice. I am talking about meditation as a method we might consider in a moment of desperation by which to look deeply into our experience without any other agenda than to find out what the hell is going on with us. We did a introduction to Zen training weekend up at the monastery last month, and there were a couple things about that stayed with me. One was a woman who was attending, and I can't remember exactly what her opening question was, but there were a group of senior students responding to questions about practice, and one of the senior students asked her, like, well, so what brought you here? Like, what brought you to practice? And she said, I'm desperate. And in that same flow of conversation, you know, someone was talking about like, you know, relaxation and meditation and Zen as a way to like learn relaxation. And one of the seniors was like, yeah, if that's what you came for, probably this isn't for you. But if you came to fundamentally wake up, welcome. That desperation, I think that probably a lot of us can relate to that. And, you know, it may be that desperation brings us to the cushion to begin with. Something's not working in our life, or we're suffering, we're unhappy. We feel like there's got to be another way, there's got to be more. And something about the teaching and the practice resonates. And then, you know, I think we come back because we see that, it's this seems like it could work. It seems like it could work. And there's probably as many different variations of what that glimpse is that, like, oh, it seems like this could work, is for each person. So once we find our way to the cushion, find the Dharma, we talk about like finding the Dharma, and that is actually incredibly precious from within the Buddhist canon of teachings to encounter, to like have a human birth, which we all have, and to encounter the teachings, the Dharma, within that human birth is like so rare. And so auspicious, and the result of lifetimes of karma. So it's like this really precious opportunity. And particularly in Tibetan Buddhist teachings, there's a great deal of emphasis in early practice on like appreciating what a special opportunity this is, so that we don't blow it, so that we don't get lazy, so that we're not like, you know, looking for a quick fix or some kind of result, and we get discouraged because it's not a quick fix. You know, and the true work of liberation takes a lifetime. I mean, even people who I think of as like realized, clear, will say like practice continues forever and there's always deepening. We have to find out for ourselves, and to find out for ourselves, we have to show up and we have to practice. And if we have a path like this, if we're lucky enough to find like a community and like a trustworthy place, a place that feels trustworthy where we can actually work on training our mind. I mean, you know, you start from the beginning and you're like, okay, I don't know what's going on. And you're shown your seat and you're told to like follow your breath. And like, it's just kind of like, okay, this is supposed to help. and then you hang in there and you start to see like, okay, this is, maybe there is something here. You got to hang in there, though. You got to hang in there. There's a teaching that I've found that I've been really like using like as a short little mantra, because what happens is we begin to practice a little bit and we begin to have a little bit of faith in it, and then for as far as I can tell, forever, we're in a place of like applying what we've learned and really practicing in accord with what we've learned, and then like kind of backsliding and reverting to our old habits, right? It's just like, and then you see something, you see a pattern or a habit or a way that you're using your mind that's not helpful or not skillful, and you're like, oh, I see this, I'm going to change it, and you work at changing it, and you go back to how you used to do it, and you work at changing it, and you go back, and you work, and you go back, and you know, even in Zazen, we have that first experience of actually like letting the mind settle. And then would that it were that then you just, you know, march swiftly sort of into full states of samadhi and great realization. It's not like that at all. Every time you sit down, you're encountering your mind afresh, and like you've got to like return fresh to that basic practice of settling. And over time, little by little, we learn how to what we're actually doing. Like, what are we actually doing that creates that? I remember doing sesshin in my early training, and I would experience, you know, after like lots of sort of like
hit and miss practice strategies. You're really just supposed to follow your breath, but we sit down and we like do everything else. Not necessarily knowing, just in subtle ways, you know? So it's like I would arrive toward the end of session in a space that felt more grounded and awake to me. And I would be like, oh my God, how did I get here and how do I keep this? And so there's a, you know, and then over time you see like, oh, I see what's happening. I see what's happening, and that can help you practice more effectively. So this teaching is from a 1700s meditation manual from Tibet. And this translation is a translation done by Ken MacLeod. The original teaching is from a Tibetan teacher called Jamgon Kontrol Rinpoche, who's prolific and within that tradition very venerated for what he offered in his teachings. And then this is a contemporary translation where Ken MacLeod has taken the text and tried to preserve the sense of verse rather than just doing a direct translation. And I think that's why it stays in my mind, is because it's got that same kind of Shakespearean verse-like feel. This is just a piece from the middle of a much larger text. Let me tell you what the key points are. When you know how practice really works, don't fall back to ordinary ways. In your core, relax as best you can. Wise are they who know these simple signs. Stable, steady practice they reveal. And it's that those two lines, when you know how practice really works, don't fall back to ordinary ways. I'm like, wow, that says so much. So how do we practice? What is practice? How does it work? How does our understanding evolve? The whole thing is resting on mind. And this is, at this introductory weekend, somewhere in the midst of things, I said something along those lines about studying mind. And one of the participants was like, you know, I'm actually really not that interested in my mind. Like, I'm kind of sick of it. And I totally get that. And in a way, like, great, you'll have a head start in Zazen. You won't have to, like, diddle around with so many fantasies. But what we're talking about is not your individual mind. We're talking about mind with a capital M. So, you know, the Buddhist teachings are full of things, teachings about how the difference between samsara and nirvana is mind. It's how you use your mind. The Dhammapada says, mind is the forerunner of all things. In his talk, I think last Sunday, Shugen Roshi said, you know, I'm paraphrasing, in practice, like actually nothing really changes. The thing that changes, like nothing outside really changes. The thing that changes is your view, mind. And of course, the deeper in we get into studying life and reality, we start to see like, oh, changing your view is actually like the whole thing. If that change is deep and true, it's going to touch everything. So how does practice really work? When you know how practice really works, don't fall back in ordinary ways. What I wanted to do is to look first at like what are the ordinary ways, and this is just my own personal study of my own mind and what I see are like what are my ordinary ways, like how do I misunderstand practice, and so that we can kind of be awake to that, and you know the ordinary ways like have their value. They have their value. They have their place in our practice journey, and then we like have to move beyond them. There's a, you know, the teaching that you use the raft to cross the river, And once you've crossed the river, you can put the raft down. And I think that that can be used, you know, there's ways of understanding practice that we need that really serve us well, and then we move through them. So ordinary way number one that doesn't fundamentally work, the Great Self-Improvement Project, right? So we can come to practice and be like, I need a fix-up job. I'm flawed. I have some lousy qualities. They're totally getting me into trouble. I have bad habits. I have problematic views. I need to fix this. I need to get rid of my bad habits. I need to basically change what's wrong. And then I'll be happy. So there is an element to, you know, changing our character, changing our habits, so on and so forth, that practice does address. So that is like a really important thing to appreciate about practice. Once we become aware of something, we have the capacity to make a different choice, to choose another way. And we may find that some things that give us trouble in our life are transformed, which is fantastic. And it's not the whole thing. Because the fundamental Buddhist teaching is that you're already perfect and complete. You're not lacking anything. So really, we want to get underneath that whole fix-it mindset. But it's not a bad place to start. Ordinary way number two. Okay, it's not about fixing it. I just need to figure this whole thing out. This is like the thinker. It's like the philosopher. It's like, okay, let me just like try and understand what's going on here. It's like thinking that somehow the correct ideas or the correct beliefs, the correct concepts are going to transform our life. And to some degree, they do. Like, we put a lot of emphasis actually on studying the Buddhist teachings, but not fundamentally. Not fundamentally. If we're sitting on our cushion doing a lot of reflecting and analyzing or thinking about Dharma, like, we could stay there forever and not have our life fundamentally change. It's not giving us an opportunity, or perhaps it will open the door, but just the sort of thinking, analyzing, figuring it out state of mind is not yet giving us direct experience with reality. And it's direct experience with reality that can change our life. And direct experience with reality, you know, is just more words and more concepts. So we can really circle around this one for a long, 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 long time and go back to it. I mean, I do again and again and again. I'll be sitting, I'll be like, oh my God, I'm having such juicy zazen. And then I'm like, oh, I think I'm just like lost in thinking about how juicy my zazen is. I'm not actually present. Subtle, it gets more and more and more subtle. The difference between thought and experience gets more and more and more subtle. When we're sitting and we're thinking about something that's 10,000 miles away, we can see like that's a very stark difference. But as our mind settles and our zazen begins to develop, we're sitting and we're thinking and it's very, very subtle, right? Like, you can be following your breath thinking about your breath, or you can be following your breath totally intimate with your breath. Ordinary way number three. Okay. All right. So it's not about figuring it out. Great. I want an experience. Pursuing or trying to create particular experiences. Also a dead end. So like I mentioned before, you know, when I would do sesshin and feel like, oh, I'm like in a certain space. How did I get here? How can I stay here? Like that basic template, I think a lot of us encounter it again and again and again. Or we think like, oh, my zazen was so terrible this morning. My mind was so busy. I was so distracted. That's super, super common. And from a true like practitioner's perspective, there's no problem with your busy zazen. That's just your mind manifesting.
Reggie Ray in that same book has a great section where he's talking about, you know, cultivating non-distraction. And he says, like, every time, he, like, devotes some time to it. And he's a Dharma teacher. He works with a lot of students. So I'm imagining, like, he's devoting some time to it because he hears about this again and again and again. And he basically is like, look, anytime that you come back to your present experience, like, that's good. Like, you don't need to think about it. You don't need to, like, beat yourself up about it. You don't need to, like, have a trip about, like, why is my practice so unstable? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He's like, no, just stop, 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 stop. It's fine. Just come back. In his talk last Sunday, it's a good talk if you haven't listened to it, Shugen Roshi talked about how all experience is dukkha. It's all conditioned. And so it's all, in subtle ways, a form of suffering. So even our blissed out sort of meditation states that we think we're going for, like, no, actually. And in the a lot of the teachings, they'll say, like in this text, that the Jamgon Kontrol Rinpoche text, he talks about, like, don't start thinking that, like, your steady, stable awareness is, like, a goal. Like, now you're just stuck again. So it gets subtle. Pursuing, creating, we're not seeing that we're always right in the midst of it. That's the thing we're missing. It's not a special state. You don't have to go anywhere. And yet, how do we gain access? How do we enter? We don't have to fix anything. It's not about our ideas or our beliefs or what we think or how we understand, not in a conceptual way. And it's bigger than any state of mind. It's not about a particular experience. So how do we not fall back into these ordinary ways? In other words, what about the first part, how practice really works? Again, like I offer from my own experience, which is, of course, I hope, ever changing and unfolding and deepening and evolving. So this is a limited view. But I thought about it, and I thought, okay, concentration, embodiment, and presence. Presence that has a live question in it. So when we begin Zazen practice and we have this basic practice of counting the breath, that's a very worthy form of training for us. And that piece about learning how to steady the mind and stabilize our awareness is really critical. You know, whether we're into that or whether we're bored by it or whether we see the use of it or whether we think of it as useless, it is actually it's right all the way back to the time of the Buddha. It's offered as a basic gate of entry because in order to see the nature of mind, M, we need to calm our busy little minds that are thinking constantly and constantly distracted. Shantideva says, beings who are constantly subject to distraction live in the midst of emotional turmoil. And that about sums it up. And if we study our emotional turmoil, we'll see it's all various forms of what you might call distraction, disconnection from our present experience, usually reverting into our thinking, freak out mind. And this doesn't mean when we're working on developing our concentration, it doesn't mean that we're not going to think or we're going to enter a zone where there's no thoughts, right? Which is partially why Reggie Ray makes a big deal in his book of being like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about if you got distracted. It's fine. You're going to get distracted. Just come back. All the way through, the mind is going to be creating. We start to see, like, whoa, part of what's going on here is this incredible creative capacity that our mind has. That's the capacity that's generating the whole illusion, this illusion and this illusion. And we can start to learn how to use that capacity in powerful ways. That's what liturgy's for. That's what invocation is for. To use the creative possibility of the mind
for good intentionally. So the mind is always going to produce thoughts. We can find ways of stability, and I think that can go extremely deep. I don't by any means think that I have plumbed the depths of what's possible. But still, some stability, some concentration goes a long way and transforms our whole understanding of what's possible, even in the beginning. And this is why it's emphasized in our training and our practice to bring the mind of Zazen into activity. Like, that's why we do Kinhin, so you're moving and you're working on concentration, and it's much harder, am I right, to concentrate while you're walking. Like, usually, like, it goes right out the door, and we're just like, da 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 da. And that's, we make an emphasis on caretaking practice, and doing work silently, so that the work, the activity, becomes a meditation. In Ango, we have a concentration practice. So you choose one thing that you know you're going to do each day, like brush your teeth. And you say, okay, I'm going to bring full concentration. I'm not going to be distracted. And when I am distracted, because I will be, I'm going to remember to come back just to that direct experience. We're harnessing the potential of our mind. It's essential. Embodiment. Again, like in Zazen, like, we got to stay in our body. It's not just a head trip. You know, you can really use your posture. I didn't realize I was going to talk so much about Reggie Ray's book, but Reggie Ray says in his book, the whole book is like about somatic, body-based meditation. And it's just the same, you know, he describes a posture, it's just the same posture, but his teaching has really evolved so that he's not asking people to work with the breath. He's asking, well, he is actually, but he's asking them to do it in a very embodied way. And so his advice, and I've tried this, and I thought it was helpful, so I'm sharing it, is that when you sit down, that you actually take a moment or two to really feel your body in the posture, to feel, you know, where your legs are touching your zabutan, where your seat is resting on your cushion or your chair, and then to come inside the body and to see if you can feel like your heartbeat and the whoosh of blood, and then from there to make contact with the breath. And he talks about different ways of working with visualizing the breath, so you're very much in a tactile relationship with it and it doesn't get heady. And he feels that in his work with Western students, we have a tendency to be so heady, he calls it top-down meditation, that we can spend a lot of time in that conceptual place and never really encounter true transformation in our lives from our meditation practice. So he's very much about, like, no, like, go to your posture. Just spend the whole period continually returning to your physical embodiment. And so we can do that in Zazen, and it's totally good practice. If you read Dogen's instructions on Zazen, they are all about posture. So Dogen's a Zen teacher. He's in our lineage. He's one of the sort of founding teachers within our Soto Zen lineage. And his teachings on Zazen are all about posture, and then he kind of adds on at the end, like, think non-thinking. But it's like, here, your ears are over your shoulders are over your hips. You're upright. The spine, so important. Because there's a teaching, the great wisdom dwells in the body. So coming into contact with our actual embodied self, we're coming into contact with our own inherent wisdom. Being with reality is an embodied experience. So we're releasing the dreaming and the grasping, and we're coming into actual life. Inhale, exhale. And to the degree that sounds boring to us, is exactly the degree that we've never actually managed to do that. Meaning it takes work and effort, and like, don't give up or, you know, lay a trip on yourself. Like, it's subtle. It's like undoing the whole way that we've always lived our lives and always like understood ourselves. So it's, you know, maybe we have a glimpse and it just happens. And actually, maybe we need to show up and take our seat for a long time and grapple with how to just be present, how to be embodied, how to drop our mind. And so then awareness, being present with the spark of inquiry. Inquiry is a shift in our usual way of using our mind that just kind of goes along, right? It's like stopping and throwing a question mark in the middle of like what we assume. And that, our mind can do that. And that is an excellent way to begin to unravel the illusion. So as our mind settles and we're coming more and more into contact with reality, we can question what is going on and who am I? And we have ground from which to really form and ask that question. The teachings say don't ask with your mouth. Ask with the whole body and mind. So we learn how to do that. Looking, we say to study the way is to study the self. Like, how do you study the self? You have to look and see. So we see, okay, I'm telling myself a story. And then we have to see, like, wait, who? Who's telling the story? Who am I? So it's all interweaving, right? It's all working together. At any moment, we may be able to use one thing or another. We may be able to come and, you know, use the teaching on entering the body, use embodiment and return. Or we may be able to use inquiry, presence, being here, and then asking, like, okay, I'm here. Am I here? Like, what? Who's here? What's here in a true way? We can use that teaching on non-distraction, you know, to settle the mind. I've been noticing I was worried about something when I came down to the temple this week, and I was running some errands, and I saw, like, whoa, you're just going ta 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 ta. Stop. It's not helping. So we can use that. I was much more relaxed once I got off of that carousel. And then, of course, that creative potential of mind, we start to see, like, oh, we can be cultivating qualities in our mind. We can cultivate patience. We can cultivate generosity. If our zazen is, like, unwieldy or not really going anywhere, we can, like, really give and show up. We can do liturgy. We can have a service. We can offer. We can use our mind. We did a retreat with Shugen Roshi last weekend on the four immeasurables and loving kindness practice, and actually using that creative capacity of mind to generate feelings of kindness and love and direct them both to ourself and to others. So we are... in the midst of this experience. And whether we're having a good day or a terrible day, something's going on. What is it? There are teachings that take you right into the construction of the illusion. So we can understand. The teachings have been passed down for us so that we can understand. And so that we can not just understand, but like have it in our being, like love, open our heart. We're gonna die. That's the thing. It doesn't last forever. This illusion, incredible as it is, it's temporary. It goes.
Not even a wisp of cloud remains. So now, while we have it, while we found a practice, even if we feel like resistant or uncertain, like hang in there. It's for real.
I would like to close with a very short poem by Dogen Zenji. I'm going to read it twice because it's short and it's got, you know, takes sometimes twice to settle in.
To what shall I liken the world? Moonlight, reflected in dewdrops, shaken from a crane's bill. To what shall I liken the world? Moonlight, reflected in dewdrops, shaken from a crane's bill.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma Talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.